Hi, welcome back to Eat Your Crust Podcast. I'm Crystal.
I'm Jisoo.
And I'm Eric.
This year, we wanted to focus a little more on career paths on the podcast. And today we brought on a friend who is pursuing a higher degree to talk about what it's like and kind of what it entails within his industry.
Yeah, Eric is a long-term family friend of mine who is currently pursuing a bioengineering PhD. And actually right now for the summer, he's in Boston doing a summer internship as well. So Eric, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what made you decide to pursue a PhD?
Yeah, so my name is Eric. I just finished my fourth year of bioengineering PhD at the University of California, San Diego, or UCSD. And yeah, we all went to UCSD at some point, man.
Yeah.
That's cool. So my lab focuses on using nanoparticles. Even though I'm a bioengineering student, I'm actually in the nanoengineering program research-wise. I'm in the lab of Dr. Nicole Steinmetz. In our lab, we use plant viruses for a lot of different, like a wide variety of different applications, ranging from things like cancer, vaccines, infectious diseases, even agriculture. But my work really kind of bridges, I think, the cancer and the vaccine side. So I work on a lot of cancer applications as well as vaccine applications. Most of my work, however, has been mainly on the cancer side, I would say. And so using like these specific plant viruses for the either like the prevention or the treatment specifically of metastatic cancers. The reason I want to do a PhD, I would say, is that when I first joined the program, I actually joined as a master's student. When I first started, I really didn't think I wanted to do a PhD. I was like, this is so much work. Like, I don't want to be in school for another like 5 years. But after my first year, I was able to land an internship as well at another company called Vertex Pharmaceuticals in San Diego. And there, I like got to talking to all the people like that work at the company. And pretty much everyone there had a PhD. Mm-hmm. And like, especially in my field, I think having a PhD is so important. And there's really a glass ceiling. If you don't have a PhD, you can only get so far. So after hearing just like all their stories, and I even talked to like some of the people that don't have PhDs, and they actually just kind of are sitting at like the research associate level for the rest of their life. Like there were some people that were like in their 50s, like in their 40s, but working on like a research associate salary. And I was just like, wow, like I don't want to pretty much just be like constrained to that level pretty much. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yeah, then like I'll just do the PhD. I mean, what they were also saying also is that like, to get from a research associate, which is where you would start off as from an undergrad or a master's student, and to get from a research associate to like a research scientist, which is the position that you would start off as a PhD, mm-hmm. it takes around like, if you even can get there, it will take still at least like 10 years.
Wow.
If you look at it like that, then just getting the PhD and just starting off as a research scientist, even though it could take like 5-6 years, technically you're still saving some time, I would say, even though you are getting mm-hmm. paid less during those years. And so that's kind of one of the reasons why I decided to go for the PhD. So I transitioned from a master's program into the PhD program.
And I'm guessing as a research associate, you can't really like lead projects. That's probably like the scientist's job.
Yeah, definitely. So it's really just like in the name, like you're pretty much just an associate. Like you are pretty much just doing like all like the manual labor work that the research scientist doesn't want to do. Pretty much just like someone's bitch. Like, I'm not even joking. Like,
shit, when you put it that way.
Yeah, you don't get to lead any projects. Like, maybe if you get to like a senior research associate, there's like different levels of research associates as well. Even then, I would say that you are not really leading your own projects or your own team.
So it's just like, suck it up, take 5 years of schooling and become mm-hmm. a scientist.
No, definitely. And also, if you look at any of like, I'm not saying I'm going to be like a CEO or anything like that, but if you look at any of like the C-suite people in like of any of the pharma companies, like the big ones, they all have PhDs. Like there's not a single CEO other than one company called Illumina. There's that for some reason, someone was able to get to a CEO level with just a master's. But other than that one guy, like there's really no one else like, that was able to get to like that kind of level without a PhD.
Mm-hmm. Damn, it sounds like you really did your research, and it kind of makes me laugh because you're like, yeah, I feel like the whole story is like, I really didn't want to, but the more research I did, the more I realized I like really fucking had to.
That's really what it is. I like, we're talking about how like with our like family dinners and stuff, we would talk about, like, I was like so adamant on not doing a PhD. Yeah, I realized that, like, also, like, the salary gap is just so big. Like, I think the research associates, like, these first start off sometimes even at like 50,000, 60,000, and like you can get up to like 100,000 like after a while, but like the salary definitely was also a big factor as well.
And it's like such a big investment of time too. So I feel like it's not an easy decision. So when you were going through the decision-making process, like, did you loop in your professor who's leading you at the lab, or like your parents, and how did you kind of form the decision, like, outside of your research?
I definitely thought about it a lot. So during that summer, especially when the internship was starting to like end, that was when I had to kind of like at that point kind of make my decision. Do I want to do a PhD, or do I want to just like stick to my master's pretty much? I would say like there's been like very few life-changing decisions that I've made in my life, but I would say this would be like one of them. And like I remember like I was at like an AMC parking lot when I was like made the decision. I was just like, I'm just gonna do it. I remember the exact moment. I was just like, fuck it, like I'm just gonna go for it. So I talked to a lot of people. I think definitely having a lot of like mentors or people that know or have been through the same struggles, I think that definitely helped a lot. The internship, I think, definitely was the most eye-opening for me. I'm just like getting to talk to all these people and getting their perspectives, and a lot of the research associates that I talked to there at the company also were just like, yeah, I really, really regret not getting a PhD. And so I was like, well, I don't want to have that regret like in the future as well. Definitely talk to my parents as well, because you know our dads are getting like pretty old and stuff, and like yeah, he works, and he was like, I would probably, I still have to support you then for the next like 5 years. I wouldn't be able to retire. And I was like, yes, but I mean, I still have my younger brother, so he wouldn't retire anyways. You know, you know,
All calculated. You're like, let's be real.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's not even in college yet. You know, one thing also that I would want to mention is that when I transitioned from the master's to the PhD, I had to actually switch labs. And so my master's lab and my PhD lab were different, because the professor that I was working under for my master's research, she was a pretty new professor. And professors, when they like hire you as a PhD, they're pretty much paying not only your tuition, but also your salary as well. And so it's like a really big investment for professors to take on PhD students. And so she unfortunately just didn't really have the money yet, being such a new professor. And so I had to go and look for a new professor that did have the money to be able to support me. And I was lucky enough to find someone. And yeah, it's been good ever since. So I got pretty fortuitous there, I would say.
That's pretty good. I know that, like, sometimes in higher education, PhD and master's, it's hard to get funding. But in bioengineering, do you think it's like a pretty solid industry to have funding for all the PhD students and professors?
I think it really just depends on the professor itself and the research. I think the major itself isn't the biggest factor. Being from UCSC definitely helps, because I mean we're like renowned for bioengineering, right? I think we're like definitely like the top five in the country for bioengineering. So that definitely helps a little bit. But I would say it's definitely more so like the research. And so you have like these people, the professors, they write grants, and depending on how strong the grant is, like that's what funds you. For like really luckily, my PI. I keep saying PI, but like PI just means professor. She's really, really good at writing these grants. And so she's actually able to like rake in money like really, really well. Much better, I would say, than the average professor. And so that I got really lucky there.
Damn, you hit the
But
jackpot.
yeah, no, literally. Yeah, she's been like super nice at everything as well. And she's been really like supportive of everything that I've done. When I was like trying to transition as well, like I like probably emailed like 40, 50 professors, right? And like of those like 50, maybe like three of them got back to me, and then like
Oh,
she was
shit.
the only one that I interviewed with actually. And like really luckily I was able to get it. I want to say that like I got lucky, but also it was just like she was like my only option at the time as well. But it worked out actually, and I really like the work that I do, and she's been really helpful in everything.
So if you weren't able to get a professor to like take you on, would you have still been stuck in master's for like another year?
I would probably just have to get my master's and then probably apply to another PhD program once I'm done with the master's. Then it's kind of like you're wasting 2 years of the master's, because you're going to get a PhD anyways, right? And so it's much, much better time-wise, because also the classes that you take as a master's can also carry over to your PhD as well. So like it really makes it a lot easier if you can use your master's and just transition. Not all schools will let you do that, but UCSC luckily lets you do that. That does happen to a lot of people actually. Like finding a professor to fund you is extremely difficult. Like that's like the most difficult thing. And so sometimes people will have like fellowships that do make it makes it a lot easier, because then you have your own money. and the professor doesn't have to pay for you. But if you don't have one, then finding a professor can be extremely difficult. Yeah.
I kind of imagined there would be like a matching program or something, almost like speed dating. I'm not sure why my imagination took me there, but it's like, I feel like it should be easier for students to like be able to connect with like a professor, especially because the school probably has some sort of directory of like people looking for PhD students, right?
All the professors have access to all like the applications pretty much. I mean, and from there, they actually then go out and just choose like who they want to interview. And then from there, the professors will choose like the students that they want. But yeah, the speed dating thing. Yeah, definitely. There's they call them rotations. And so, but this isn't for master's students. You can only do it as a PhD student. So I actually didn't have that opportunity because it's only during your first year. And what they do is like you pretty much you're allowed to rotate into a different lab every quarter. And then if you like it or not, and then you can choose from there, you can choose. Some people don't choose to rotate. They like really like their first lab. So they just stick with that lab and they don't rotate at all. Some students will maybe like rotate just once or sometimes, but some students will use all three quarters to rotate throughout the labs and just find the best one. There is some process like that, definitely.
Slow dating.
Yeah, slow dating, yeah. Yeah, it's an entire quarter. So yeah, it's definitely a long time.
All right, so we mentioned we touched a little bit upon how like your professor will have to fund you and pretty much like pay for your tuition and your salary. Yeah. So what does your salary usually look like for PhD? Or I guess like to pull further back a little bit more, does that mean that as a PhD student, you're not paying to be a PhD student? You're pretty much getting paid to be a PhD student?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Yeah, so going from a master's to a PhD, like owing the school money to getting money has been like so like helpful. Definitely they do pay for your tuition and you also get paid a stipend as well, and I mean it's not a lot of money, but it's like enough to like get you by. Like I don't really need parental support that much sometimes. Like if there's like something like my car breaks down, then I will have to like ask my parents for some money. Like it's not enough money to cover like big expenses. Most things that they will give you enough money to support you pretty much. It's like around like $2,500 a month. It's not a lot, but it's not terrible either. But I think it's also dependent on the program as well, because I know that we get a stipend pretty much, and the stipend is like $34 a year. But I think that econ PhDs, I have some friends in the econ department. They only make like $19 a year, which is absolutely terrible. So yeah, it is definitely dependent on the program as well.
Right. I'm sure also like school, all of those things, location factor in as well. But yeah, I can imagine it would be very tough to do like a less robust or not robust, but like less popular PhD program just because they probably have less funding overall.
Right. Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, people in like the history department or like even like stuff like that, they definitely get paid a lot less. And because like it's research, and research definitely brings the school money. So I do feel that they try to give the researchers more money. Definitely.
How about you walk us through kind of like a day in the life of your PhD student life?
Yeah, sure. I wake up around like 6 or so.
Oh, shit.
And then...
Damn. I'm already shocked.
Is this out of choice or is this like...
No, it's out of choice.
Okay.
Oh, I see.
Just need to make sure.
Also, because like I tell everyone this, but like I started my PhD like pretty much 1 year later than all my friends, right? Because they start off as a PhD, and I don't want to be like the last one left at the PhD when everyone's like gone. And so I'm trying to play catch up pretty much, which is why I think I work longer hours than most of the other people. But I think that's really the only reason. This is like, I just like, well, I don't want to graduate like the same time as everyone. I think now like I have been able to like catch up, so I probably don't have to put in as long hours for the last year. Yeah, but probably wake up around like 6 or so, get breakfast, and then get to lab around like 7. From there, I'll probably work in the lab until probably like around 6 p.m.
Damn.
Wow.
And then from there, sometimes I'll go to the gym maybe like 3 or 4 times a week, and then just get dinner and then sleep. That's pretty much every weekday. And I would say because I'm like in the lab a lot, I think it really depends on like what kind of research that you do. But my lab does do a lot of like wet lab work. And so I would say that I spend like 80% like doing like actual like research, like bench work. I would say like 20% is just like on the computer. So, and I know that a lot of people, it's going to be very different. Like there, for instance, in our program, even there are some people that just like are completely computational. So they just do zero lab work and they do 100% in like computational work. And there are some people that don't do any computational work at all. So then they're just like 100-0. yeah, it just really depends on what kind of work that you do. In those times, like sometimes, I mean, I just do like, there's a lot of like assays and stuff that you do. There's like, for instance, like there's something called like ELISA, like there's like characterization that you do. These are just very kind of like more niche terms, but I work with a lot of cells because I work with cancer. So you have to like grow like these cancer cells and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the cells freaking suck because like they don't, like, they're not going to wait for you, right? They're not going to be like, oh, I'm just going to stop growing on Saturday. And so sometimes you'll have to like come in on like Saturday to like passage them. It just means like you got to like take care of them. And I also work a lot with mice as well. I do a lot of in vivo research. I would say like 50% of my work nowadays is actually doing like just like mice experiments.
Dude, to me, it just sounds like you have a bunch of pets that you have to take care of.
Dude, I was literally just thinking like Eric has plants.
I do have plants actually. I also keep, we use plant viruses, right? So we do actually grow our viruses in plants and we have to like harvest them from the plants. Yeah, the planting is also not fun.
I'm literally imagining you in the lab like, all right, gotta feed the mice today. Gotta like give these cells water and these plants water.
No, definitely, definitely. As fortunately, like in the vivarium, there are people like that are hired by the school that, and they feed the mice and stuff for you.
Oh, nice.
You just kind of have to like do the experiments. So yeah, very fortunate not to feed them, but all the plant stuff I do have to do myself. And like, I tell my friends this too, but like, I really didn't think going into the PhD, I was going to be like this farmer. And a lot of the times I am like taking care of these plants just like all the time. It's super annoying, but I mean, it is what it is. And now actually I have master students and undergrads that like work under me. And so now all that is actually in their domain. So I no longer take care of the plants really. But in the beginning, I definitely did a lot of that.
Oh my God, the hierarchy is already starting. Students who will be the research associates are already working for you, the future scientists.
No, it's super true. Like I actually, all my bitch work, I also definitely hand over to them. So, like after like you make like these viruses or you like prepare the viruses, sometimes you have to like create like specific viruses for different applications. So you'll like, for instance, like conjugate like a peptide or something on the outside. After that, you have to do a lot of characterization to see that it actually, like, this, like, conjugation process actually worked. And so all the characterization of that usually goes to the research associates or, like, the master students. And that's probably what they would be doing, honestly, like, in the industry as well, honestly. Mm-hmm. So it is, like, pretty helpful for them. And actually, one of my master students that just graduated, she was able to find a job like, as a research associate just this year, like, after she graduated from the lab. And she said, like, everything that she learned in the lab was, like, super helpful. And, like, they asked her a bunch of questions during the interview process. And she said that like she wouldn't have been able to answer like the lab based questions without like prior lab work. So I think in the end it is like it is like bitch work, but like it is like pretty helpful for them to like find a job in the future.
I guess it's very interesting because working in a lab for your PhD is more like you're actually doing work. Or I mean, I guess it actually is. You are doing work, so you're like prepping in a different way than undergrad. So when you go into the industry, you technically already have like some experience, huh?
Especially with the PhD, because they have to pay you more. If you don't have that experience, then you won't be able to get hired, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And that's why also so many people, especially in the industry, also get postdocs. So like they like do like a lot of like postdoctorate work in a lab and then go on to do industry. That's actually really common as well. And especially at the big pharma companies, at the smaller ones, maybe you can just kind of get by with a PhD. But at the big pharma companies, a lot of people, I would say like greater than 50% of the people have postdocs. I think what you're saying is correct in that like you definitely need the PhD skills to be able to translate well into the industry.
So essentially, like what you described as your day-to-day life looks like it's mostly research and not classes. Does that mean PhD program is pretty much like almost like a residency of like working in a lab versus actually taking a lot of courses?
Yeah, so I didn't mention that, but I'm pretty much done with all my classes, that's why. But in the beginning, my first like 2 years, I was taking classes and also doing research as well. But then it's more like 50-50 where you can't do research just like the entire time. You have to like take in the classwork as well. Now, I'm not a huge fan of the classes, honestly. So I much prefer just like being in the lab. So I like this part of my PhD a lot more because I don't have to like focus about like, you know, getting good grades and stuff. And especially because in the PhD, like grades really don't matter like at all. When you're like going to apply to like these companies, no one's going to be like, oh, you had a B+ in this one class. Like, we can't hire you. Like, I think it's very separate from undergrad where like the grades do matter. I think here is really just, can you do the research or not? Mm-hmm. And I think that's like the most important thing. Yeah, so all the grades actually are also just like supplemented where like the lowest grade you can get is like a B+. like in a lot of these classes and stuff, like, because again, they don't really, yeah, it doesn't really matter. And also, if you have a certain, if your GPA is below a certain level, like they actually have to like kick you out.
Oh shit.
And they like really don't want to kick you out because they like put in so much time and like effort into like your program, right?
Right.
And like money as well. So I was taking classes, yeah, in the first 2 years.
So it sounds like the first 2 years you just take classes very similar to a master's where it takes about 2 years. And then after that, it's just like pure PhD work.
Yeah, no, definitely. All the PhDs and master's students are taking the same classes too. We're in the same classrooms. We're taking the same classes. Yeah, so it is very similar. But I would say some of the master's students don't do research as well beyond their classes. They just do classes. But the PhD students have to do research as long as with the classes as well. So there is a slight difference.
That sounds like such a different pace of life or like pace of studying, because I know you were pretty studious throughout like middle school, high school, college, even trying to get into this PhD program. I'm sure like you had to get really good grades and stuff. So is it like a huge relief to not have to worry so much about grades anymore?
I don't know. Was I studious?
You're studious with a mix of other qualities.
Yeah, definitely until high school, I was definitely cared a lot about my grades. Undergrad, it went a little downhill a little bit for the first 2 years. Not caring about grades. And we say that though, but like because the grades are so inflated, pretty much everyone does get good grades. So like even though you don't really like care about your grades, you still get good grades, like a lot of people do. I also like the second part a lot more, as you mentioned, because I think it is more, much more like a 9-to-5 job. I pretty much treat it as like a 9-to-5 job at this point, because like it is like just like kind of going in, do your work, go home. I'm like yeah, in undergrad also, like, you know, it's like fun because yeah, you have classes and stuff, but like if you like, for instance, like wanted to go to a friend's house on like a Wednesday night and like have like a board game night or something, just like do anything, or like go to like a concert on Thursday or something like that, like you can definitely do that.
Right.
But like I would say like in your PhD, you can still do that because, I mean, you technically can because no one's really like watching over you like a job. But if you treat it as like a 9-to-5, I would say that kind of freedom is, it's not there as much as compared to undergrad.
You say 9-to-5, but in reality, it's 7-to-6.
yeah, true. I also actually work Saturday and Sunday as well.
Oh,
I pretty much work 7 days a week. But on the weekends, I don't go in for a full day. I usually only go in like maximum like 4 hours per day.
Better than 9 hours.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to do that all 7 days.
Well, it seems like you have given yourself a lot of structure in your like day-to-day. Do you feel like, even though you treat your program kind of like a 9-to-5, do you feel like there's a bit of a lifestyle difference from your friends who might be just already working regular 9-to-5 job? Or do you feel like it's still like pretty similar?
Yes, there is definitely more freedom as a PhD, because like, yeah, my professor, like she won't be like, oh, you didn't come in, you came in at like 12 p.m. instead of like 10 a.m. Like there are people in my lab that like come in like really, really late into lab, but like they also like work later as well. Like here, like the hours really don't matter. It's just like, can you do are you going to do the research or not, right? So there are some people in the lab that come in at like 11, but like leave at like 7 p.m. I think that kind of like freedom, there's definitely more freedom and not as much structure as like an actual 9-to-5. But I think just personally for myself, I just like to have that structure. I think it helps with like the craziness of a PhD. For instance, like also like we don't have to like go into like meetings and stuff. I think that's a big thing. Like, we have like one like lab meeting like pretty much like every Friday. Yeah, but that's pretty much about it. Like even like working in this internship right now, I'm like, dude, when are people like doing research? We're like in meetings 24/7. Like so annoying. There's so many goddamn meetings. So I think that's the thing as well. It's like definitely less structured, I would say. But you can make it structured, but it is definitely a lot more freedom.
Right. It's like more up to yourself, kind of.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're in school?
Yeah. I mean, I would say I do feel like I am in school, because like also like all the people that I work with are pretty much like, you know, like my age or like close to my age. But like working here and at this company right now, like everyone is like so old, you know. So it definitely feels a little different.
That's true. You do have to work with old people when you start working.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy that like works right next to me, like that guy must, dude, he needs to retire. Like, this guy is so old. Like, dude.
You're like worried about him.
Yeah, it's like, should you really be drinking a second coffee right now, man? Like, I don't know if your heart can handle it.
I think continuing along the like, do you feel like a student line of questioning, when you go back and hang out with your hometown friends or like friends from your college who didn't go further into education. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like more of a student-ish, or do you feel any sort of difference?
I think financially, there's definitely a big difference. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of something that like hurts me a lot, is that like they can like spend all this money on like, let's say going to like outside lands or something, like a concert, right? Or like, mm-hmm. But I have to be very selective with what I do, because I just don't really make as much money. So I think that is probably a big thing. Like, for instance, I think we all wanted to go to like Canada like recently, but I could only afford like to go 3 days, but they went for a full week. Mm. And so something like that, I think that definitely plays a big factor. Other than that, I mean, yeah, I don't think it plays like too much of a factor between like my friends. Like, they know that I'm a student, yes, but like there are also some of my friends are also like getting like graduate degrees as well. Mm. And so there's that.
I feel like it's smart how you've structured your weeks and days so that it feels like you're really just a regular worker like the rest of us. Mm-hmm. But I guess there's one thing that I'm curious about. That means the people around you, though, who aren't in like higher education right now, they could be going through things like promotions and like going up the work ladder. Does that make you feel a little weird, or are you just like, oh, well, when I join, I'm already going to be like leagues ahead of
like
everyone.
A scientist? Yeah.
Yeah. Cause there's no like really room, like you can't like promote like a PhD student. So I definitely agree with that. Yeah. Hearing about my friends, like, and now we're getting into the stage where like people have been in the industry for like 5 years now. And so some of my friends have gotten like promoted twice already, or like even like once. Like, so I do definitely think that is something that I am missing out on. And with that, I think it becomes pay raises as well, right, for them.
Right.
Definitely feeling the brunt of that a little bit more so now that we've been at work for a little longer now.
It's kind of interesting to hear you say that, because I feel like as someone who pretty much started in a 9-to-5 right after college, I have felt the opposite feeling of like, okay, now we're like, I don't know, 3-4 years out of college graduation. People are starting to get like, you know, secondary degrees. And I'm like, damn, I just have an undergrad degree. So it's kind of interesting to hear you say like, oh, okay, like people are getting promotions. That's weird. And it's like, the grass is always greener, where I'm like seeing my friends get masters and like people are about to graduate with their PhDs. And I'm like, shit.
That's true. The other day I was thinking like, oh God, we are at the age right now where if anyone entered like med school right after college, undergrad, they are planning on going into residency soon. And I was like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Like, that's
yeah.
how old we are now.
Yeah, I know. It's so sad.
Like, all those LinkedIn posts of like, oh, I just graduated from whatever school. Like, I'm Dr. So-and-so. I'm like, oh God. You're scaring me.
No, definitely.
Our friends are all going to be doctors soon.
Yeah, and like the closer I get to graduation also, like the more and more, because like whenever you like are close to graduating, like an entire email goes sent out to like the entire department being like, oh, this person's going to defend their thesis pretty soon. Ooh. And like at first, like I had like no idea who these people were. Now, like I'm like actually seeing like names I know. And it's like, fuck, like what I need to graduate too. Like, it makes you like, it kind of does light a fire under you as well. Because you're just like, damn, like I need to be where they're at. But I mean, most of them are still definitely like 1 year above me. And I think the average is still like 5 years, I would say. Now seeing people that I know graduating is pretty crazy.
For you to graduate, do you have any like requirements? Like you have to publish X amount of papers? I don't know, anything in addition to just the thesis?
First off, like, yeah, you need to have a thesis. So that's the most important thing. And to write a thesis, technically, you don't need to publish anything. But like, I think most professors themselves have like their own internal guidelines. So I don't think there's really anything from the school, as long as you pass like the specific benchmarks, like on the test that you have to do along the way. So like after your first year, there's something called quals, which is just like a test that you have to take. And then from there, you have something called the Senate exam, which is like where like with your committee, you have like a defense pretty much, where you are defending what you've done so far, and you kind of also give an outline as to what you will do in the future for like the next like few years that you have left of your PhD. That's where a lot of people get cut, actually, is the Senate exam. If you pass the Senate exam and you're like you pass on to like candidacy, that's what they call it candidacy. From there, you're pretty much set. Like at that point, like it's very hard to fire you, and also like you pretty much got in the like okay that like you can become a PhD student pretty much. No one's going to fail you at the actual final defense. Like, I mean, they technically can, but like you've gone all this way, like obviously to like defend, you've also done this so much research.
It would be so cruel.
Yeah, no, it really doesn't happen. Like I don't think it ever happens really. So it's just like you got to really pass that one midterm, like the Senate exam, and then the last defense. But yeah, internally, like for instance, my professor, she wants most PhD students to graduate with at least 3 publications. So I would say that's kind of like the benchmark. But I think with every professor, it's slightly different. There's also like tiers of journals as well. So let's say like the top tiers are like, that's like Nature or Science, Cell. If you publish like just one paper in one of those, like that's probably like as good as publishing like 3 like lower tier journals pretty much.
Oh, wow.
Because like, yeah, those are like the top of the top. I think it is like on a case by case basis, really. But I think as long as you just have something to write on your thesis or something to put on your thesis, I think it'll be okay.
That makes sense. I think because probably I imagine in bioengineering and, you know, anything like bio related anyway, probably takes a really long time for research to get done sometimes. So to limit people to how many papers they have to publish might be very like difficult to standardize.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, sometimes things just like don't work, you know, like if you get unlucky and you get put on a project that just no matter what you do, just doesn't work, then unfortunately, yeah, that is the case for some people that like no matter what you do, like maybe it's just like a project that was like it was destined to fail no matter what. It was never going to work. And so there's definitely some luck involved as well. But that's why most PhD students also are on multiple projects so that you kind of can minimize the lack of like productivity.
Man, I don't know why, but I feel like the idea of defending your thesis sounds really scary. It almost sounds like you're in court or something and people are just like judging your thesis. But how does the process like actually work?
It's pretty much just like a 1-hour presentation that's open to everyone. This is where like your parents will come, like all of your friends can come. So the first 1 hour is just like a summary of what you've done throughout your entire PhD pretty much. But then after that, there's maybe like they kick everyone out. And then it's just you, your professor, and like your committee. And then for like 30 minutes, they pretty much just grill you they go into like really specific questions. I would say like that's kind of like where like it would be kind of scary. But also at this point, like everyone has given so many presentations at this point, right. And like you'll kind of like get the same kind of questions all the time. At that point, you should be at least pretty set to like defend your thesis and kind of defend your work. The Senate one is definitely a little more scary, I would say, because you're still kind of early on and you may not have as much experience or knowledge. Even then, like my professors, my committee weren't too harsh on me, so it was okay. The scariest, I think, actually is more so the quals, the test that you like the oh, just the test that you no. have to take, because at least for my program, it's an oral test. So there's 3 professors, and like you, and they will like tell you to like answer this problem, and you have to like just do it in front of them, like on a whiteboard, and like trying to like do math like on like in front of someone. Like it's, I don't know, it was pretty scary.
Dude, when I do math like out loud, I'm always asking people around me like 7 + 5, just thinking out loud. Imagine like your fucking professors just sitting there, and they're like, yo, what? You don't know 7 + 5?
Wait, yeah. Literally, so pull out my calculator when I calculate TIFF. I'm like, just to double check.
Do you get to choose your committee?
Yes. But there are certain guidelines as well for us. Other than your professor, there's 4 other professors. And 2 of those 4 have to be in the budgeting department, like the department that you're in. And the other 2 cannot be in the budgeting department. So they have to be from outside departments. So yeah, so there are some guidelines, but you get to pretty much choose. And whenever you ask a professor, most often they will say yes to being on your committee. So it's just a matter of asking them or not.
Right. Wait, so if they're not part of the department, how will they understand your thesis?
So they might not be part of the department, but like there are, for instance, the chemistry department. There's a lot of people in the chemistry department that do a bunch of like biological research. And so one of my professors is actually in the chemistry department. Another one of my professors in my committee, he's in the pharmacology department. They're not in the bioengineering department, but they still do very similar research. So they will be able to. But there's definitely sometimes a case where they have no idea what you're talking about. And so they'll ask you maybe like 1 question.
Dude, so...
Oh, so you have to look out for them.
The plan is to just ask people from like the writing department.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, but then also like your professor would be like, dude, like no, like because like you usually like ask for advice from your professors, like who you should ask on your committee, and like usually it's just like your professor's friends also that she was like, oh, ask this person. But if you like chose like a writing professor, yeah, I think my professor would be like, dude, like what the hell are you doing? There's no way this is gonna get accepted.
Does your relationship with like professors and how you see and interact with professors in general change a lot once you become a PhD student? Because I feel like when you're an undergrad, there's still sort of that sort of scary, like authoritative figure. Mm-hmm. But you sound like you're really close with like a lot of the professors that you work with.
Oh, definitely. You get a lot closer to them because, I mean, you do interact with them a lot more, I would say, than an undergrad. Like, even if you are in undergrad research, I feel like you still don't really meet with the professors as much just because you're just like really an undergrad, especially if you're in the bigger labs. In undergrad, I would call my professor just like Dr. something and like their last name. Like, I would say like Dr. Grunfest. But here, like, I just call, like, my PI, like, because that's, like I just call her by her first name. So I would say there is definitely a little more familiarity. Yeah, and I think just, like, getting to be, like, be able to bond with professors is actually really, really important in your PhD as well, because these people are going to be the ones that, like, write your recommendation letters for, like, either work or even there's, like, other, like, fellowship applications or, like, scholarships. And they can also help you, like, tremendously, I feel like, if you're, like, looking, if you want to stay in academia especially. Having like really close ties with other professors is very important, yeah, especially in academia, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I have a question. So after graduating from PhD, do you think a lot of people stay in education or a lot of people go out into industry?
I think there are a lot of people that do want to stay in academia, but getting a professorship in the US is like so difficult now. It's really almost impossible. You have to like really, really be like the top of the top these days to be able to get a professorship. So a lot of people do try. So they'll do their postdocs and they'll like write like the grants and whatnot. But the success rate is just so low that I think a lot of people do end up just kind of giving up and going into industry. But there are some people like me, for instance, that do just want to go straight into industry. And I think that is also pretty high as well. I would say, I think like going in, I think it's like 60-40 industry academia. Is just like kind of like what I would say, but I would say like more so with due to how hard it is to get a professorship, I would say it's more so like 99-1 in the end that goes into like industry. Because yeah, it's literally impossible. Like you have to have such a good, like, and like these days also they really care about like what you do outside of lab as well. So you have to have a lot of like recreational things. Like a lot of like the people that were like interviewing for the, some of these UCSD positions in the nano engineering department, they like created like these clubs for like disproportionately affected people, or like they were like in some like postdocs, like LGBTQ, like postdoc club or something like that. Or like they were like the president. And that has actually become a lot more important these days, especially at like these forward thinking universities, like UCSD specifically. I think it's because also the talent pool has gotten so like good. Mm-hmm. That like anything you can do to stand out is all, at this point, just like helpful.
Whoa, it's kind of crazy. That makes it sound like applying to school in undergrad, but like 100 times harder.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like your resume has to be like top notch. Diversity also plays a big role as well in how you can like increase diversity. UCSD actually now has a set guidelines on how diverse each program has to be. So we have to hire like a certain amount of like people from like minorities, pretty much like either like women or like different, like, you know, minority races, and like Asian actually doesn't count as well. So Asian is considered a part of the majority.
Interesting. So for someone who wants to go into the industry right after your PhD, like yourself, does the lab work that you do currently really like affect what kind of job you want in the future? For example, like, are you trying to go like the cancer cell route, the plant route, or I forgot what the other one was, like mice research route?
I do some vaccine work as well. But that definitely, like, because at this point, you should be like self-sufficient. So like you shouldn't, no one should be teaching you how to do like the work that you need to do once you graduate forth. So like, and they don't want to put in that time either. And also you're so specialized now that you really have to be pretty adept at like what, and like you can't just like, for instance, like if I do cancer work, but I was like, oh, I'm just gonna go into like cardiovascular research instead, like then no one would hire me. Like just because you're doing research doesn't mean all that research is gonna very easily translate from one thing to another. If I let's say if I am in the cancer field, like I do like immunology, I do a lot of immunotherapy work, and so I would probably most likely be in like an immunotherapy company. And like for instance, like my internship right now, I'm in the oncology department. And so I do a lot more immunology work here. And, but like, if you do want to like make like a certain like switch, for instance, like let's say I'm an immunology, but I also want to like be really good at like gene therapy, for instance, That's why people do postdocs, because then you can get three more, like 2 to 3 more years of being able to like being in a different lab and picking up different skills. And then you can combine those skills as well. So there is like opportunities to hone your skills in different areas. And that's what postdocs are used for mainly.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Just more time,
more schooling. Yep. Yep.
I mean, it makes sense because research, of course, takes a lot of time, and it's like you filled your brain with so much specialized stuff. So you can't just flip a switch and be like, actually, I know all of this other thing too.
Yeah, definitely.
So before we close out this episode, do you have any final tips for any students that might be looking into a bioengineering PhD program?
Sure. I mean, I don't know if I'm like the person to like ask for that kind of thing. I definitely wouldn't like, I wouldn't say I'm like this super successful PhD student or anything like that. I feel like I'm just doing my thing. But I would say publishing is extremely important. Try to publish, but not in like these terrible journals that are like, so journals are measured by impact factor. That's what it's called, the IF. Yes, publishing is important, but that doesn't mean you should just publish in like an impact factor, like 2 paper or journal or something like that. Like you should definitely try to publish in better journals. Try to go 10 plus if possible. I think that's like the kind of the set standard. And also like you really need to want to do the PhD, because I feel that there are people that same as me going in were like, I'm just going to do it just to do it. But then like after a while, you really learn to like have to like love the work that you do. Otherwise, I think it's just too much of a grind, and it's just too much like constant failure pretty much, that like it really just begins to sometimes like you can kind of tell like it like bums people out. So a lot of people do end up just kind of mastering out actually from PhD programs. And I think like 2 people from my lab actually did do that. And so a lot of my friends recently have also just been mastering out as well, that were in the PhD program originally. So I think there definitely needs to be a desire to do the PhD as well. Also, finding a good professor, I think, is extremely important. If they're too busy, because they're just such a big professor, I think there's benefits to that, because they're like such a big name that like probably like publishing is easier, probably getting like grants is easier, but then they won't have as much time for you. But maybe you're like super good at research, so that you don't need that kind of mentorship. So if you're one of those students, then that would be actually okay. But if you think you would be one of those students that do need a lot more mentorship and kind of like need to like work from the ground up a little bit, then maybe like a smaller lab would be better for you, just because you have more one-on-one time with your professor, or he or she can really mentor you through like through the research.
You mentioned mastering out. So is mastering out just basically they like quit the PhD, but they get to keep a master's degree?
Yeah. That's pretty much what it is. And a future tip as well, if you are looking into getting a master's, but you don't want to do the PhD, I would say just apply for the PhD, just do it for a few years, and then like just quit. Then it's actually a free master's then.
Oh, true.
Oh, that's true.
It's actually, you don't have to pay at all. You actually got paid as well, and you still get a master's degree. So if, for instance, my kid in the future wants to get a master's degree, I'm just going to have them actually just do that. I think it just makes way more sense financially. I mean, it sucks for the professor, obviously. Like, so you wouldn't go into your professor and be like, I'm going to quit in 2 years. you wouldn't do that. But like, it is definitely like a lot better for you financially to do that.
And maybe like along the way, you'll be like, oh, actually, I could do this PhD.
Right.
Yeah. No, definitely. Definitely.
You PhD out.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Eric, for coming on and sharing your experience as a bioengineering PhD candidate, I guess now you could say. Just so our listeners know, this was pretty specific to bioengineering, so it might not apply to like all the other industries. So yeah, take like, I guess, everything with a slight grain of salt, unless you're going for bioengineering.
Yeah, I agree with that. And also like, a PhD is very important in my field, but I think not all fields require a PhD. Like you don't have to have a PhD for a lot of like software engineering jobs, I would say. But in some other industries, like maybe even like chemical or material science, I think that it could be pretty important.
If any of our listeners have thoughts on like getting PhDs or maybe even their own experiences to share, feel free to reach out to us at eatyourcrustpod. And we also have email eatyourcrustpod@gmail.com.
And if you want to catch our other episodes, then feel free to follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other podcasting platform. We upload new episodes every Wednesday morning.
Thanks for listening.
And don't forget to eat your crust.